Hi, we are Angie and Annalie, and this is Brain Basement, a podcast where two friends who used to do yoga together in a basement now chat about chaos and wellness. As moms, we understand chaos. As expats, we get what that chaos looks like when you take it overseas.
From Manila to San Jose, we share stories of living abroad and explore topics around mental and emotional well-being. This podcast is for expat moms who want to find wellness amidst the chaos of everyday life. Welcome to Brain Basement. We're so glad you're here. We're back with another episode, this time talking about random thoughts, just ideas that Annalie and I have popped into our mind and open to talk about it. And before we get started, Annalie is ready to get us focused.
Yes. So if you're like me, you've been running around doing lots of different things today. And so this is kind of our moment to come back to the present. And it doesn't mean that you necessarily have to stop what you're doing. I found that with this specific practice, I can do it on the go, but it still helps me kind of to come back to my breath and to the present moment. So you might have heard of it before. It's, well, I call it the five senses. So let's just start by taking a deep breath in. Inhale. And I like to pause a little bit at the top of the inhale, and then just exhale slowly. And as you exhale, look around you, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, and just notice one thing that you can see. And keep kind of that slower inhale, exhale while you notice this thing that you see at your own pace. And now we're going to move on to hearing. So think to yourself, what is one thing that you can hear right now that's different from my voice? And just notice that. What about smell? Is there anything that you can smell right now? And if so, notice that thing that you can smell. Maybe it's really, really subtle, or maybe it's quite pungent, depending on where you are. Just kind of be with that smell for one moment. Then notice something that you feel. So your hands might be touching something, you might be sitting down and you feel the back of a seat behind you on your back, or maybe it's the feeling of your shirt against your skin. Just notice one thing that you can feel. And then lastly, just think of one thing that you appreciate. And maybe it's something that you just noticed, or maybe it's something entirely different. Something that you feel gratitude for today. And let's just take one more deep breath in. And kind of pause at the top of that inhale. And then when you're ready, exhale and completely. And just let all of the air out of your body. All right.
Oh, that was so good. I actually felt my legs and like my feet relax while we were doing that. Thank you. Okay, talking about random things, this week. It's winter. It's 2020. We're coming up on the end of 2020. So I've had so much on my mind, but really appreciating your ideas, Annalee, and just this idea of talking each week and having some focus on something a little bit mindful, something that I'm not maybe aware of until I know that that's our subject, and considering it has me noticing mindfulness in all kinds of different places when I'm reading articles, when I'm talking to people. And one thing that I had thought about bringing up today was comparison. Comparison has kind of been on my mind as a, it's, I guess, as something that like wreaks havoc on my mindfulness. Comparison in a way that is not helpful to me or useful, but just seems to be something that like my brain does, sort of when I'm not paying attention, comparison comes in, where I'm comparing myself to, you know, as a mom, or I'm comparing myself as an organized person, as a less organized person in age comparison. Or I had a talk with a friend that I hadn't seen in quite a while. So we hadn't gotten together in years, and she invited me to an outdoor yoga session, and we went, and then we caught up for a while, and she was describing her life and what she's been going through the last few years, and a lot of upheaval and splitting up from her husband and moving to a new location and all kinds of things. And she said, but your life, you know, is perfect. Or she said, you have a normal life. And I said, what do you mean normal? And she said, well, obviously your life is normal or great. Or she had some vision that my life was better than hers. And then I've just been thinking about comparison a lot, how, you know, and I said to her, like, but my life isn't normal or perfect by any means. Of course, there's this version that you could picture it that way, but I don't see it that way. And I could have that version for your story. The way I would describe her to someone else would be like, she's really strong and she didn't stay in this bad situation and she got out of it with her, by ending her marriage and starting something new. And it's just these comparisons that we have, for one another. And I think I usually go around assuming that everyone has kind of a messy life. So I don't assume that anyone has that perfect life. So when I'm noticing that I think someone else is perfect, I kind of bring myself back to, they might be really talented in that one area, but they probably have other things happening in their life just because we're all humans. So I don't know, comparison, that's what I was thinking about. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Wow. That's interesting. I guess what came to mind first was, you know, you and I have talked about this, the stories that we tell ourselves, and that there's so many stories that are available to us, but it's just interesting to notice the one we pick to repeat to ourselves. And I really think that, like you said, you generally assume that everyone is struggling in some way, and that's a story that you tell yourself. And I'm sure you can find evidence for that. You know, in this friend, you notice that she has had really significant struggles, but she's stronger because of them, and she's done some amazing things with her struggles. And I just think we can, that's just interesting. And her story, you know, that she was kind of expressing to you was this story that you have it all together and maybe no issues at all. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't know who she is, but it would be interesting to kind of look at what other stories she has for other people in her life, you know, and maybe if her current circumstances just are hard enough that that's an easy story to pick up, you know, for her right now.
Yeah, exactly. I even asked her, I said, wow, that's like amazing to me, because here I am assuming that everyone has struggles, and I had never even pictured, or I wondered to myself, have I been a counselor for too long, or that I'm assuming everyone has struggles, and that she even had the option in her mind of thinking like some people have it all figured out, or some people have a perfect life in a way. And it was, I actually brought up to her the two stories idea that we've talked about, that there's always another perspective on this story. And so she was saying, you know, Angie, you have four kids and you move around the world and you've raised them and they've turned out well and you have a happy marriage. She said, you know, all of this kind of the story that she had pictured as my life. And I said, look, just in coming, we had met at an outdoor yoga class. So in coming to the yoga class, I had to drop off my son 40 minutes away. The yoga class is right by my house in Washington, D.C. at a park. And instead he told me at the last minute, I have to drive him all the way in the opposite direction. So I'm rushing down the highway to get to this yoga class at the last minute. And I'm trying to like voice text her. And then I notice my gas light is on, so I might run out of gas and my phone battery is about to die. And then I'm worried I'm going to not be able to find where they are in the park. And then I get there and I'm late to the yoga class and we join in and it's lovely. And there's, you know, people walking in the park and a drum circle happening. And then after class, she's like, hey, do you want to go for a walk and chat? And I'm thinking like, yeah, I can do that. And then I remember that my son is at my other friend's house after my other son. And so I haven't made plans to pick him up after that. So I completely forgot about my 13-year-old. And, you know, and I was like, look, half the people that I would meet today, their version of my story would be Angie's life is such a mess. Like she's too much. She has too much going on and she's insane. And so that could be the way people see me. But you're picturing this, like, I've got it together version of me, which I think the second version is probably closer to the truth, the total chaos version. So it was just, I kind of pointed out that other story to her.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think, too, the times that people have told me, you know, you have it all together, or you just look like so happy and your family's perfect, I either want to, you know, die in laughter because it's so funny because I know the truth of my life, or I want to sit down and bawl because the reality is we, you know, don't have it together. And I don't know, we're just like you. It's just if we only knew the true story, right?
Right. And I do wonder if social media plays a role in that. If now us having that constant input of like photos of this visual, you know, selective version of everyone's life. And of course we all put the silly, messy photos too, but you know, I do wonder if that plays into that idea of thinking that everyone else has, you know, the perfect everyone in their matching pajamas family photo, smiling and looking lovely kind of life.
And it's interesting to think about how it evolves and like ebbs and flows too. Like I feel like I definitely have a different relationship with comparison now than I did maybe 10 years ago. I think I was a little bit more vulnerable to it. Just it was an easier path for me to take mentally. But now I think I just have to kind of check where I am, because sometimes I am in a spot in life where, like you said, social media or these external like windows into people's perfect lives, like quote unquote, aren't good for me to consume. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of have to be like, oh, that's not the best thing for me right now. Like maybe she could be in that space, who knows, but it's interesting to kind of monitor it because it hasn't been like static for me. I think it kind of goes up and down and it changes over time.
Yeah, of course, that makes sense that it would, depending on where we are, because of course it's all just our own headspace. Like if we're in a good spot, we're just happy when we see other people having a happy, perfect looking life. And it's only when we're not feeling good about ourselves that we start to worry when we see someone having a happy, perfect looking life.
Yeah. Well, this kind of goes into one of the things that's been on my mind. Because it does have to do a little bit with social media, and that is that our church leader came out and invited us as a church to share things that we're grateful for on social media and use the hashtag give thanks.
Oh, wow.
So then, you know, the next day it's just flooded with all of these things that people are grateful for. And he said, do it for the next 7 days leading up to Thanksgiving. And it was a really cool video actually. Cause he talks about the power of gratitude being like a type of therapy for us and a source of healing. But it was so interesting to monitor my social media use over the last week, because usually I've mentioned this on the podcast before, I don't love social media all the time and I kind of avoid it, but I was set like an all-time record high on usage because just the stuff that was shared was so enriching. And even though it might have looked perfect on the screen, like we were talking about, like a picture perfect moment, it didn't feel like a threat to me because my brain was in the space of gratitude that they were sharing this because it's something that they are grateful for that means a lot to them. And I was receiving it as that too. Like just a really, yeah, it's something that they're grateful for. Instead of, you know, I don't know, thinking that they're putting it out there for some other reason. But anyway, so that's the part that related to the social media. And I just found that to be really interesting that I loved the emotions that my feed was generating.
Yeah.
And I really did feel a difference because the narrative was positive to me. It wasn't negative. Like the general narrative of
this
posted.
It's interesting to me because I am friends with you and probably a lot of other people, and I noticed that hashtag give thanks, but I didn't even realize it was connected to your church. But I was noticing like, oh, this is nice, this is cute, like small things that people were saying. It was like a cookbook and thing, you know. It wasn't I'm so happy to have all of the, you know, big lovely items. It was just people in gratitude saying, I appreciate this cookbook in my life, which has made my life easier. Small, simple things. And that brought me joy for sure, but I didn't realize what it was connected to. So that's nice to hear the background.
And it was, you know, the internet too has been such a place of divisiveness as of late. And so I just appreciated kind of the switch in tracks. I mean, obviously it was just kind of not everywhere, but the places where it did spread that positivity, I really felt a difference. So this is kind of what's been on my mind. So I did feel a great sense of gratitude, like the week following, leading up to Thanksgiving. And I also had some sadness kind of settle in. And I think you and I we personify emotions enough that they have become like real people in my life. And so I pictured sadness like visiting me. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting because even at dinner, when we sat down as a family for Thanksgiving, I felt such a strong presence of gratitude and sadness, both of them together.
Oh, wow.
And I just kind of rode that for a few days. And inside, it kind of felt like they were playing ping pong or something. That's how intertwined they were. And it was like they took turns just kind of giving, you know, voicing their message or,
yeah.
And it reminded me of this quote that Susan David says, who is a professor and researcher at Harvard on emotions. And she says, emotions are data, not directives. And so I was trying to look at them through that lens last week. Like, why are you guys here? And what are you here to tell me?
Uh-huh.
And it didn't feel like they had the better of me at any moment. It was just that they were like two people with me and that we all were just kind of taking turns, you know, saying or doing different things. And, but I definitely had to allow myself to feel them. And I guess one part of this that just was a little bit of an aha moment to me was the idea of honoring both of them. So I think my gut reaction would be to honor gratitude because it feels warm and nice and all the things, but, and then to not honor sadness because we tend to label that as bad or negative and we like something's wrong. But I sat down, I think it was the day after Thanksgiving and everyone was out of the house. And I just thought, I'm just going to feel these things. And usually I write down or, you know, have some way of getting it out. But I had so many thoughts in my mind that I just decided to record my voice on my phone and maybe I'll just go back and delete that and never listen to it again. But I just like spewed out all the sadness, gratitude, and they were totally combined, you know, like meshed together. There were so many different thoughts, but I did feel lighter after I had done that. Like I had given them a chance to speak.
Wow.
And I don't always do that. I rarely do that, but it was just an interesting week because they were just there and they weren't going away. And even after I did that, it's not like they left. But yeah, that was one of my.
Annalee, this is the second thing that I wrote on my list to talk about today. The words I wrote are leaning into a thought instead of changing it, or like leaning into a feeling. And this is exactly what I was thinking. I think for years I have lived my life as wanting to change it, right? You notice like, oh, sadness. Okay, how do I get out of that? Or, oh, discomfort, or I'm, you know, angry, I have to get rid of that and move into happiness. It's just, I'm always thinking like, how do I get out of this and move to happiness and joy and gratitude and appreciation and all the, you know, quote unquote, good feelings. And it's just opened up a new world to me to just accept and live in and feel the feelings, right? And to say, okay, this feels, I'm really upset about this, or this is, you know, heartbreaking that I can't hug my mom because of COVID, and those kinds of moments. And now, and just being able to allow myself to feel that instead of saying like, well, I should be grateful that she's here and I can see her at all. And, you know, it feels terrible not to hug your mom. That is a terrible thing. So I can just feel terrible about it. And so I think that's a new-ish thing for me in the last couple of years to realize that I can have these feelings, process these feelings, you know, and appreciate them too. What would life be like if I was just in one emotion all of the time? So I think, yeah, having sadness there. I can even picture you at the dinner table with like one chair for sadness and gratitude over there. And you're like, I'm just filling a plate for gratitude and I'm not going to feed sadness. But then you're like, no, you can have some food too, sadness. Like, you're a special part of my life. And there are these moments there. So that's really neat that you would say that and recognize it. And I think it does, it's just not helpful to try to erase feelings or ignore them or push them away. We don't end up living our whole day in joy when we're, you know, stressed and upset. If we just try to ignore the stress and upset, does not make us like instantly relax and have a lovely time.
Yeah. Well, it was with me no matter what, right? Like, right. It was with me if I was dealing with it or if I was ignoring it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had kind of pushed it off because we were busy until that minute when I sat down on the couch and thought, okay, I'm going to listen to you for a minute. And like I said, it didn't go away, but there was some aspect of it that just eased up. And that's interesting to think about, like what you said, leaning into something that's uncomfortable, because I don't know if we'll ever get to the point where it's like, angry is the best, you know, but when I'm not labeling them and pushing them away and just kind of, yeah, leaning into them, accepting them a little bit more, it's like their power kind of weakens a little bit. It's not as intense. I don't know how to describe it, but there is something to that, like being open to having them come.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, it's like appreciation can go hand in hand with sadness, and there can be appreciation that sadness is there too, right? Like,
yeah.
Space for that. But I don't think that's common. I don't know. I don't have very many talks with friends and people I know.
Yeah. So actually another thought I had that goes with what you're saying, is I was listening to a webinar by Mark Brackett, who is the director of the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence. And he has a book called Permission to Feel. Anyway, I love the stuff that he's putting out. But he talks about how we spend so much of our time thinking about wondering why we're feeling a certain way versus thinking about how we might want to feel. Mm-hmm. Or what could we be feeling like in any given moment, you know? And so, for example, if I'm really worried about the future or what's around the corner and stressed about kind of the unknown, and maybe I'm kind of tired of feeling that worry or that stress, it's just easy to stay there in that place of worry and wondering why I'm feeling worry. But if I think about this question of, okay, I'm worried, but what emotion do I actually want to be feeling right now? And then to be able to answer that question. And then the follow-up question he said was, what would that emotion look like if I was acting in that emotion, if that makes sense? So if I want to feel hopeful about the future, what would hopeful look like right now? Very specifically, like, what would I be doing right now if I was feeling hopeful versus worry? And that was just interesting to think about, because he said the answer to that second question is really revealing. Because I guess the way I would answer it is, worry usually like paralyzes me. I don't generally do much when I'm worried. I just kind of, avoid it or don't do anything to fix anything. But if I feel hopeful, then my actions are different coming from that space.
For sure. I think this goes along with what we were just saying about leaning into a thought is like, we do not realize that we can be deliberate and intentional about our feelings.
Yeah. Right?
We just assume like I can set a goal and I can make a plan for next week, but I don't know what I'm going to feel. It's just whatever feeling comes up, I will be at the mercy of that feeling. If depression washes over me, then I will be in depression. If, you know, something fun happens and then I'm in joy, then that will happen. And we just leave that up in the air because we assume that we don't have any ability to control feelings. And I think it's all awareness, right? Like sadness is there. And then you think, how do I want to deal with this? Now I'm making a plan for how I want to accept sadness. And if I want to feel hopeful, how do I make a plan for, you know, how would I act if I was hopeful right now? And being intentional and setting really deliberate choices for our feelings, waking up in the morning and saying, you know, we're telling ourselves one way or the other. Maybe we're saying like, oh, I wish it wasn't Monday. I wish I didn't have to do this today. I don't want, you know, today's going to be awful, or this week is going to be terrible, or our trip is going to be, you know, long and arduous or whatever. We're telling ourselves one thing or the other, but we're not usually telling ourselves deliberately deciding, I'm just deciding that it's Monday morning and today, this week is going to be great for no reason at all. I'm just deciding that and going to expect that and go for that.
Yeah. And it doesn't always mean, you know, that it's, you know, the example I shared was worry to hopeful. You know, it doesn't mean that we're seeking that quote unquote positive feel good emotion. Maybe we wake up and realize like, I'm really frustrated today. And I need, that's something that I need to lean into. But like you said, we can be really deliberate about what we are feeling and how we process it. Like you said, we don't have to just be at the mercy of that. I like what you said, and it starts with our thoughts, right?
Yeah, which I think, again, it's just something we haven't learned and we haven't been taught to, hey, what would you want to feel if you could pick anything next week? You know, no one ever asked you that or what, and we're always kind of chasing those feelings thinking if I accomplish A, B, C, D, then I'm going to feel, you know, X, Y, and Z, but we're not. We could just decide to feel that right now.
So
it is, I mean, I really like that idea, and you know, just noticing where I'm at, what I'm feeling, how much of it I'm allowing to happen, what I want to feel next, you know, all of those on the roadmap of feelings, what's coming up.
Yeah.
Ahead. That might be a good place to wrap up. Did you have other things you wanted to talk about?
I mean, I had one more, but where are we?
Yeah, just do a quick.
Yeah. So this one's just kind of like a fun little thing that, you know, I'm a brain geek sometimes. This is just something I want to learn more about, but it's this term emotional granularity. And it's the ability to identify and name emotions with specificity. So we've talked about on the podcast the importance of labeling emotions. Uh-huh. But emotional granularity is being really specific with the words we use around our emotions in a way where it's helpful to us. Like the more specific we can get in labeling that emotion, the more specific we can get with ourselves at getting to the root of why that emotion is there.
Oh, wow.
And so the idea of developing vocabulary around our emotions, and this this author, Lisa Feldman Barrett, she wrote a book called How Emotions Are Made, and I haven't read it yet. But she says that if we don't have words for an emotion, then that emotion doesn't exist. So she gives the example of other languages. So like if there's a word in German that means an emotion that we don't have in English, then we basically don't experience that emotion because we don't have a word for it. And that's how important the words around our emotions are, is that if we don't have a way of explaining it or expressing it or labeling it, then we can't quite get at that emotion. So I asked my husband last night, because he speaks Russian, I said, is there a word in Russian for an emotion that we don't have in English? And he said, yes, there it's, one of them is called gardenia, which sounds like the flower in English. Uh-huh. But he said it basically means extreme pride. So we think of pride in English like it can go either way. Like pride can be a really positive thing, like I'm so proud of my children, or pride can be go negative, like they're so cocky and conceited.
Yeah.
But he said gardenia in Russian can never be positive, really. The way it's used is to mean extreme pride, like someone that's so into themselves they can't even be touched, you know, and they're not going to step down off of their high horse or whatever. And I just thought that was so interesting, because I don't know if we do have a word for that in English. Maybe it's conceited, but he said it's very, very prideful.
Uh-huh. So so interesting to think about. That's making me think of the other article. Now I don't even know who it's by, but about grief. And that process of some cultures allow, I think they said in the Jewish religion, you take a year, there's a word for, you know, you're spending 1 year in grief and you're not, things are not expected of you. You're not, you know, no one says like, how come you're still sad? That happened 8 months ago. It's expected that you are, you know, wallowing in sadness for that year when you've suffered a great and tremendous loss, and that we don't have that in our culture today. Is more like get back to work and get over it. There's a really short time limit for grief, and something bad happened to you, and yes, like now get over it and don't talk about it and move on and get things done.
Yeah.
But yeah, so words for emotions, that's so interesting. So are you doing that for yourself? Are you doing granularity? Are you thinking of specific identities, names?
I'm not researching other languages right now, but I did find that part fascinating. But I guess it did make me think, you know, I labeled that emotion last week as sadness. Mm-hmm. And I really thought, is it something other than, it did make me think this idea of emotional granularity, is it more than sadness? But in the end, I was like, no, it's just, that's the name that feels good.
Uh-huh.
But I do like, I just love this idea. I think it's fascinating that it actually is really quite important, the words we use to describe how we feel. And
yeah, that is interesting. I'm going to be thinking about that this week and more specific identifications of, I need more words for frustration.
What are frustration's cousins? You got to channel in.
Yeah, like annoyed, bothered, what
rage.
Else? Irritated. Oh yeah, rage. Rage is anger. It's a, that's a big brother of anger. I think of... Oh, well. Okay, that sounds like a good place to wrap up. Thanks again for
the talk.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week on Brain Basement Podcast.
Bye-bye.
Bye.